Dhritarashtra uvacha.
King Dhritarashtra said,
Dharmakshetre,
in the place of pilgrimage.
Kurukshetre,
in the place named Kurukshetra.
Sarvetaha,
assembled.
Yuyutsavaha,
desiring to fight.
Mamakaha,
my party.
Sons.
Parnavaha,
the sons of Pandu.
Cha,
and
Eva,
certainly.
Kim,
what?
Akurvata,
did they do?
Sanjaya,
Sanjaya.
Translation.
Dhritarashtra said,
O Sanjaya, after my sons and the sons of Pandu assembled in the place of pilgrimage at Kurukshetra, desiring to fight, what did they do?
Purport.
Bhagavad Gita is the widely read theistic science summarized in the Gita Mahatmya, glorification of the Gita. There it says that one should read Bhagavad Gita very scrutinily with the help of a person who is a devotee of Sri Krishna and try to understand it without personally motivated interpretations. The example of clear understanding is there in the Bhagavad Gita itself, in the way the teaching is understood by Arjuna, who heard the Gita directly from the Lord. If someone is fortunate enough to understand Bhagavad Gita in that line of disciplic succession without motivated interpretation, then he surpasses all studies of Vedic wisdom and all scriptures of the world. One will find in the Bhagavad Gita all that is contained in other scriptures, but the reader will also find things which are not to be found elsewhere. That is the specific standard of the Gita. It is the perfect theistic science because it is directly spoken by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna. The topics discussed by Dhritarashtra and Sanjaya, as described in the Mahabharata, form the basic principle for this great philosophy. It is understood that this philosophy evolved on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, which is a sacred place of pilgrimage from the immemorial time of the Vedic age. It was spoken by the Lord when he was present personally on this planet for the guidance of mankind. The word Dharmakshetra, a place where religious rituals are performed, is significant because on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, the Supreme Personality of Godhead was present on the side of Arjuna. Dhritarashtra, the father of the Kurus, was highly doubtful about the possibility of his son's ultimate victory. In his doubt, he inquired from his secretary, Sanjay, what did they do? He was confident that both his sons and the sons of his younger brother Pandu were assembled in that field of Kurukshetra for a determined engagement of the war. Still, his inquiry is significant. He did not want a compromise between the cousins and brothers, and he wanted to be sure of the fate of his sons on the battlefield. Because the battle was arranged to be fought at Kurukshetra, which is mentioned elsewhere in the Vedas as a place of worship, even for the denizens of heaven, Dhritarashtra became very fearful about the influence of the holy place on the outcome of the battle. He knew very well that this would influence Arjuna and the sons of Pandu favorably, because by nature they were all virtuous. Sanjaya was a student of Vyas, and therefore by the mercy of Vyas, Sanjaya was able to envision the battlefield of Kurukshetra even while he was in the room of Dhritarashtra. And so Dhritarashtra asked him about the situation on the battlefield. Both the Pandavas and the sons of Dhritarashtra belong to the same family, but Dhritarashtra's mind is disclosed herein. He deliberately claimed only his sons as Kurus, and he separated the sons of Pandu from the family heritage. One can thus understand the specific position of Dhritarashtra in his relationship with his nephews, the sons of Pandu. As in the paddy field, the unnecessary plants are taken out, so it is expected from the very beginning of these topics that in the religious field of Kurukshetra, where the father of religion, Sri Krishna, was present, the unwanted plants like Dhritarashtra's son Duryodhana and others would be wiped out, and the thoroughly religious persons headed by Yudhishthira would be established by the Lord. This is the significance of the words Dharma Kshetre and Kurukshetre, apart from their historical and Vedic significance. Om Jnanati Mirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Nama Shreshtam Manamapi Shakti Putram Atra Swarupam Rupam Tasyagajam Urupurim Maturim Goshtavatim Radha Kundam Girivaramaho Radhika Madhava Sham Prapto Yasya Prathita Kripaya Sri Gurum Tam Natosmi Vandeham Sri Guru Shriyataf Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagraja Tam Sahagana Raghuna Tanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Taitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitas Cha. Gopala Acharya Prabhu, in his capacity as the town president, invited me to come here, and he asked if I would give a seminar while I was here on various topics. I suggested, how about speaking on Bhagavad Gita, having a Bhagavad Gita class? Because we see nowadays that often in many temples the Bhagavad Gita class doesn't happen, which was supposed to be a staple of the Krishna conscious temple life that Srila Prabhupada gave. And often visiting preachers give various seminars on various topics, which is nice. But it seems to be presumed in giving such seminars that the participants or the audience are already well familiar with Bhagavad Gita topics. But if there isn't a regular Bhagavad Gita class, then it's quite likely that the participants are not familiar with Bhagavad Gita topics unless they somehow or other personally have the inspiration to study Bhagavad Gita. So, considering that Bhagavad Gita, as it is the presents the basic philosophical understanding of Krishna consciousness on which this Krishna conscious movement is supposed to be based, it's essential for anyone who wants to advance in Krishna consciousness, which is supposed to be the reason that people come to this movement, that they would be conversant with the basic philosophy as presented by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita and as re-presented by Srila Prabhupada. When I say re-presented, I don't mean changed, but presented again in a context, a modern context, you could say. So, this basic stuff, it may seem... it's just basic stuff. As you have all probably heard it said by certain persons who used to follow Srila Prabhupada and who say that they are following Srila Prabhupada still, they say, well, Prabhupada just gave the basic things and we have to go to someone else for higher things. But I see in many cases that people like to talk about higher things, but Phalena Parichyate, we have to judge by the result. They don't. It's relatively easy to talk about higher things, but even to follow the basic things doesn't seem to be so easy for everyone. And in many cases, people who are talking about higher things are not even following the basic things. In Gaurya Vaishnava terminology, or in the terminology of the followers of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, such persons are called Prakrita Sahajiyas, which means that they they take it very cheaply and easily to talk on higher topics, but they don't follow basic principles. So Srila Prabhupada, he himself, although he was undoubtedly on the highest level of devotional service, but he very patiently and repeatedly spoke on topics of Bhagavad Gita. His preaching was very much based on Bhagavad Gita. As I see it or analyze it, Srila Prabhupada's preaching, especially in the West, was particularly on two points. Number one, that we're not the body, that we can understand that we're not the body, because the body is always changing, but the soul, the living force doesn't change. Therefore we understand that the soul is eternal, which means that we're taking body out of the point that we are not the body and the implications of that. And that there is this, we have to accept, even if we, actually this is Bhagavad Gita philosophy, but it's understandable in a logical manner, and Krishna himself presents it in a logical manner, and that there is a supreme controller, namely God. And Prabhupada would say, well, if you accept that there's God, you don't know who he is, I'll tell you, it's Krishna. And if you can't bring, if you don't know who God is, then why don't you accept what I say? And here's the definition of God. You can't give a better definition of God than is given in Shastra. So on these points, and then Srila Prabhupada speaks about Varnashram Dharma, first class men, second class men, third class men, fourth class men, which goes against the egalitarian spirit of the age, but anyway, Prabhupada would. And on various topics, Srila Prabhupada seemed to relish publicly making a big issue of they didn't go to the moon, and women's liberation is all bogus. So Srila Prabhupada, even though such topics were anything but politically correct, I mean the point about not going to the moon was not only politically not correct, but it was just unimaginable at the time that anyone could say such a thing, because we saw it on TV. Prabhupada was not fooled. So Srila Prabhupada's basic preaching, everything was based on Bhagavad, the teachings of Bhagavad Gita. And actually, even in giving the Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is discusses very, very high topics, and giving Krishna book, in which the very high topics are discussed, but the basis for understanding all of these topics is the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita as it is. So Srila Prabhupada, he tirelessly spoke on this, although he could have spoken on Krishna kissing the gopis. He didn't. I don't think there's any. Well, there is one letter in which Prabhupada said to one young girl, she was maybe 16, 17 years old, Prabhupada's disciple, now she must be an old woman, that you can become a gopi and Krishna will kiss you. But generally Srila Prabhupada was very circumspect in discussing such topics, and he spoke on Bhagavad Gita untiringly. He didn't get tired of it. He didn't think, just speak on Bhagavad Gita. He didn't get tired because he wanted that people would become Krishna conscious, and he wanted to give them what they needed to hear, and he was tireless in doing that. He gave his disciples what they needed to hear rather than what they wanted to hear, or maybe what they thought, maybe they themselves thought they were on a higher level. When I was admitted in this movement in the mid-1970s, shortly after that, I heard an anecdote. I haven't heard it since, or I haven't seen it written down anywhere. It's one of those Prabhupada sayings which are not official. But it's not out of character with Srila Prabhupada, that You can see in the Veda base that Srila Prabhupada in 1973 during an extended visit to London at Bhaktivedanta Manor, he spoke on a series of verses from the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita in which Krishna repeatedly and in various ways establishes that the soul is different from the body. So a devotee told me that, a devotee in London at that time when I joined, which was 2 years after that, told me that one devotee had said to Srila Prabhupada that, Srila Prabhupada, you're everyday speaking on you're not the body, so now we've understood that, could you speak about something else? And Prabhupada retorted that you haven't understood it, that's why I need to teach it. I need to repeatedly state it. So, although some of our devotees are more learned and widely read than Srila Prabhupada's disciples were in those days, because when I joined the movement, anyone who'd been in the movement at that time for 4 years was a senior devotee. And 2 years was already quite respectable. Because it was a new movement, and so nowadays senior devotee means 30 years, 25 years, but in those days 4 years was, you know, a venerable senior member of the movement. We didn't have time to read so many things. So nowadays devotees have read more, but I wonder how many can honestly say that they've completely realized they're not the body. It's still an issue, isn't it? As long as we have material desires, then we're still implicated in bodily consciousness. So, even though I'm not saying it's wrong to discuss other such things, and we should, there should be some forum for discussing other topics, or not exactly other topics, there are no topics outside, there are no Krishna conscious topics which are fully outside the scope of Bhagavad Gita, the teachings of Bhagavad Gita. But some of them are more developed on the teachings of Bhagavad Gita, just like, for instance, there are many seminars on the holy name, or there should be more seminars on Varnashram. I wouldn't recommend too many seminars on Gopi Leelas, maybe no, very restricted entry. There may be so many topics. I'm supposed to be in America next month to discuss with certain devotees of how to understand Srila Prabhupada's teachings, with various questions such as, anyway, I know it's, the questions are quite horrible actually, quite some of them. So, but yeah, there is a place for higher scholarship, you may say, or more developed. But in another sense, it's not higher. Nothing's higher than Bhagavad Gita. This, what is that? Gita su Gita kartavyam kim anyai shastra vistara yasrayam padmanabhasyam mukha padmad vinishritat. In the Gita Mahatmya, which Srila Prabhupada refers to in the first line of his purport here, in the first verse of Bhagavad Gita, it stated that the Gita should be recited very carefully, very nicely. What need is there for study of any other shastra? Because this is directly spoken from the mouth of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So what need is there, if he himself is speaking, what need is there to speak of it anymore? Now we may say, well, there's no need, everything's there in Bhagavad Gita, but then again, topics of Krishna are unlimited, and Krishna has spoken about himself, and then other devotees speak about him, and Srimad Bhagavatam is the development of the basic topics of Bhagavad Gita. But the topics of Bhagavad Gita in themselves are fully sufficient for our God realization. The Srimad Bhagavatam gives more insights or depth to the certain tattvas or philosophical points in Bhagavad Gita. When I say philosophy, that's we don't mean the speculative philosophy of the Western world, but in philosophy in the Vaishnav context means to understand reality as it is, not to speculate. And Srimad Bhagavatam also develops the discussion of rasa tattva, the rasa and blissful exchanges between Krishna and his devotees. So these two books, which are non-different, they're both non-different from Krishna. They're both indispensable. Without Gita, we can't properly enter into Bhagavatam without the teachings of Gita. And actually, the Gita is better understood by understanding Srimad Bhagavatam. The topics of Gita, because they are more developed in Bhagavatam, so they're by studying Bhagavatam, one's appreciation of Gita increases. So they're mutually nourishing each other. So both should be studied. But Gita is the basic. Even if we study Gita, Bhagavatam, which we should do, it's a vast work. But all the points of Bhagavatam are captured in essence in the Gita. So it's very valuable, even after studying the Bhagavatam regularly, to regularly come back to the Gita and find that the points in the Bhagavatam, which are developed in so many ways, they're expressed in crystal and in concise form, and concise and very clear form in Bhagavad Gita. So this study should go on. And it's not I read Bhagavad Gita once, I read twice, it's okay, now I understood. But the more we come back to Gita, we'll find that it's unlimited, as Krishna is unlimited. There's so much to be understood from Gita. Personally, in the last year and a half or so, you were asking me what I was writing. Well, I'm talking about the books that are likely to come out more soon. But after finishing the work on Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav, my meditation on the teachings of Bhaktisiddhanta, my mind went more towards Gita, and I've been writing so many things on Gita, which might at some point in time come out as a commentary if I have time. But I just every time I look at, even just now reading, there's so many points that it's so potent, so virile with understanding and meaning, and it's so many points. There's this some section, that last section at the end of chapter 3, I'm just reading it, going through it, and finding there's so many things, so many points in there which are so important for our Krishna conscious development. Chapter 16 of the Gita, so relevant in the modern age, with the description of the demons. And that chapter 16 of the Gita, that very much interfaces with the sections in the Bhagavatam 12th canto, the description of Kali Yuga, which is dominated by demons. And actually there are such descriptions not only in Bhagavatam but in other Puranas also, in other works also. So really the Gita is, it's short, I mean by Vedic standards, this is a small book. Most people nowadays, if they look at this, they won't even like to look at it because, you know, even a cartoon, a book of that size, is beyond their capacity to even imagine going into. So what to speak of, philosophy, just open. We'll start from the beginning. If you see the introduction, the first words of the introduction. Bhagavad Gita is also known as Gita Upanishad. It is the essence of Vedic knowledge and one of the most important Upanishads in Vedic literature. There are probably quite a few people in the Western world, they read that much and that's enough for them. They won't read anymore because they're already lost. They know what Upanishad or Vedic literature, and they're already lost. The first book of Srila Prabhupada's that I ever read was Krishna Book Volume 2. We used to distribute these paperbacks in 3 volumes. So I was living in Wexford, just outside Wexford town at the time. I was working in someone's household and I saw that book in the bookshelf, so I asked if I could read it. So he said, okay. And I opened it, and you know, people, they fold the page when they want to keep the bookmark, so it was folded on page 1. It was in mint condition apart from the fold on page 1. So I read it all, and there was no temple of ISKCON in Ireland at that time, so I went back to England and I'm still here, still in the movement. So a lot of people, it's just, it may seem just too complex or too difficult, and sometimes I say, you know, why should we distribute these books? But Vijay Prabhu, as you probably know, is the ISKCON's world minister of book distribution. He noted that all over the world, because he travels all over the world and meets with book distributors of Srila Prabhupada's books, he finds that many joined by reading, especially by reading Bhagavad Gita as it is. So people who do take the trouble to read it, it's transformative. And although most people are very superficial and, you know, one or two words like Upanishad, which they don't understand and they'll be lost, and it's too much effort for them, because people in the modern age, they don't want to make any more effort than absolutely necessary. And they'll only make effort if required to for sense gratification. But if reading is for sense gratification or for getting knowledge by which you can earn money or something like this. But if reading seems so difficult, and then they'll leave it. But there are others who, by seeing this Sanskrit script and having a quick glance, will understand that this is something ancient and profound, and they're attracted to that, and they can understand that this is very high. Just at a cursory glance, they can understand this is a very high level of knowledge. It's clearly completely different from anything else that they have come across before, and they want it, and they're willing to make the effort to go through it. And people who do so, then certainly they're going to become devotees. They're going to take it seriously. As I mentioned in this book, which should be shortly published, on speaking strongly in Srila Prabhupada's service, you may say, well, many people may be turned off by speaking the direct truth. And maybe that's true. But for the few people who are actually seeking the truth and who will recognize it when it's spoken, for them you should speak it. And for others who are superficial, they may not be attracted. If you joke with them or tell them stories, they might be superficially attracted. But if you speak the truth that this world is miserable, it's full of the miseries of birth, death, old age and disease, we're all controlled, we should accept that we are controlled, we are not the controller, we should submit to this supreme controller. Many people, they don't like to hear it, but for those who are actually sincere and searching for higher than the humdrum, miserable life that we are all, everyone who's not Krishna conscious is subjected to or is party to, then such people will, they'll be instantly attracted to that. And I gave an example of Ravindra Swarup Prabhu, who wrote in one Back to Godhead magazine that he went to a Krishna temple. Somehow or other he went. He wasn't much into going, but somehow or other he went. It wasn't his thing, but he went. But then when in the chanting, at first to him seemed strange, but then the lecture, he said, was the most welcome thing I'd ever heard in my life. He said the speaker spoke that life is meant for God realization, and to do that we have to follow four regulated principles. These are required: no meat eating, no gambling, no illicit sex, no intoxication. Now you might think for new people that will just turn them off, but he said, Ravindra Swarup said, it's the most welcome thing I heard in my life. He said, at last, he said, I realized someone is speaking the truth. So like that, we may say, well, we should have bridge books which present the Krishna consciousness in a somewhat those who recommend it don't say watered down style. And I'm not wholly against that. I mean, books like Coming Back present, they don't give the... Well, it deals with the topic of reincarnation, which is a very important part of Krishna conscious understanding. Even the higher tastes, some devotees who are like really ultra right wing, I guess you could call them, would say we shouldn't distribute cookbooks or things like that. But I'm not against that, because if the higher taste or cookbooks, if you put the Krishna conscious philosophy of why we should be vegetarians and the spiritual dimension, well, that's a way to get people who are interested in vegetarianism to expose them to a higher level of vegetarianism. So there may be such, you could say, indirect forms of preaching, but at the same time our main preaching should be to present the whole truth and nothing but the truth. What's that in the court, they say? Who's been tried in court recently? Do you have any serial killers here or anything like that? I vow to speak the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And you're supposed to put your hand on the Bible. But the thing is that most nowadays people don't believe the Bible. Maybe in Northern Ireland still. The Protestants do, right? Isn't it? They're supposed to be a good Protestant. You have to believe in the Bible and hate the Catholics. And probably round the other way. Hating the Catholics is the most important thing. So, why distribute these Bhagavad Gita? Because it is the unmitigated, undisguised truth, the whole truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And at least for those who are sincere or looking for something more than what's on TV or more than a comic book or cheating religion. There are so many Mayavadi books are out there, all cheating. Then this book will be appreciated. And everyone will appreciate it. In the room, I'm saying, the guest room, there's a copy of this book, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, which was a compilation by Shubhananda Das of interviews with various scholars speaking about the Krishna consciousness movement. This came out maybe in the early 1980s. So that book was formerly in a library. The particular copy, which is in the guest room, was in a library in Belfast. The Belfast Society, the stamp is there, Belfast Society for Promoting Knowledge, something like that. Are you familiar with that library? And nodding your head. And then it says, in over the stamp says deleted, which there's a print saying deleted, which I guess that means it was removed from the library. You can, as libraries do often from time to time, they remove books from their stuff. So anyway, someone at some point in time had taken that book, seems from the library, and throughout the book, at the beginning, at the end, and in various places in between, he puts his learned comments there, namely the word in capital letters with two exclamation marks after it. He repeatedly wrote bastards. Sorry to say the word here, but I'm just speaking the truth. That's what's in the book. So it made an impression on him, right? Definitely made an impression on him. He didn't like it, but whoever wrote that, in a perverted and indirect way, was admitting that there's something substantial there, because it evoked such a response from him. So that's the effect of the truth. If we preach the truth as it is, then we can expect that some people won't like it. And we, although our movement these days is very much concerned about good publicity, if we're actually preaching Krishna consciousness as it is, the teachings of Bhagavad Gita as it is, we should expect some people won't be very happy with it. So we don't have to go out of our way to make people unhappy, but we should not cease to speak the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And if we preach anything else but the truth, then we are making a truce with Maya. Here we see Dhritarashtra didn't want to compromise. Prabhupada notes that. In that sense, he agreed with Krishna. Krishna also didn't want to compromise. Arjuna wanted to compromise. Dhritarashtra didn't want one. Krishna also didn't want one. So, although there may be cookbooks, cooking seminars, it's also a way to introduce people to Krishna consciousness, if it's done in the right way, if it's not just cooking, but should be actually introducing that. Well, actually, we have to offer the food to Krishna, and that's essential. So there may be various lighter ways, you may say, to bring people to Krishna consciousness, but we shouldn't become light. If we just give the light stuff without the real stuff, then we're cheating people. So a Bhagavad Gita is required for ourselves and for others. We are the Bhagavad Gita movement. It's Srila Prabhupada, his teachings are based on that. And even if we ourselves personally rise to the highest levels of appreciating Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan, which we all should do, and that was definitely Srila Prabhupada's aim in preaching Krishna consciousness all over the world, was that people should come to that level. But still, it's not that we ever go beyond Bhagavad Gita, or that we neglect Bhagavad Gita, or that Bhagavad Gita will ever cease to be the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita. It's not that that will ever cease to be the main message that we have to present to the world, the people who are not in Krishna consciousness. So Bhagavad Gita as it is, ki jai. please read it, have classes on it, and distribute it, and become absorbed, and learn the shlokas. Yeah, okay. Any questions, comments, protests, or desires to read cartoon books? Now you can have Krishna cartoons with no philosophy whatsoever. Anyway, it's, what is that called? Little Krishna? Some cartoons have been made. Someone gave me, I put them on my system. I watched one of them for about 20 seconds and deleted them all. There's something about Krishna and the gopis laughing and joking. And I thought, this is not Prabhupada's Krishna. This is not Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's some very light and cheap presentation. Prabhupada presented Krishna and the gopis in Krishna book, but with philosophical understanding given at every line, so that people don't take it as something cheap. Also, as people come in, the first thing they'll see all these paintings of Krishna intimately with Radha and the gopis. That wasn't Prabhupada's standard in the temples or in his books or anywhere. Prabhupada had pictures of Rasleela and Radha and Krishna, but in a formal manner, somewhat formal, not very showing anything very intimate. And Prabhupada, he complained once, why only Krishna and the gopis? Well, he wanted also pictures of Mahavishnu, universal form, Krishna and Arjuna. If people come in and they see, or the first time they come and they see Krishna and Radha, they'll think it's just some kind of sexual thing, some kind of cheap romantic thing, which is why these pastimes of Krishna with the gopis, it's a very private matter. It's not for our public preaching. So, anyway, I mentioned that to you already, and you mentioned that you already had it in mind along with the 20 million or so other things which need attending to. Some things are more urgent than others, but really, we should remember that this is Srila Prabhupada's movement, and Srila Prabhupada was not just someone who just kind of bumbled over to the West and somehow or other some things came out of his mouth, and but we all know better. You know, he did a good job of just introducing it, but we all know much better than Prabhupada. But Prabhupada, he was very, if we're actually to be followers of Prabhupada, we have to accept him as the empowered representative of Krishna, who Krishna sent to teach as was required to teach in the Western world. And even in India, Prabhupada didn't have this, for instance, this, he didn't present all these gopi leelas. Once in Madras, the very important man, the Chief Justice in the Supreme, in the court of Madras, of the state of Tamil Nadu, him and his wife were pleading with Prabhupada, please speak to us on Ras Leela. And Prabhupada said, no, I can only speak to qualified people. And they kept on insisting that we're qualified. And Prabhupada said, okay, you're qualified, but I'm not qualified to speak. They were such important people, he refused to speak on that to them. Once he was asked to inaugurate a book about Krishna Leela in Oriya language. So there was a meeting, was called, and Prabhupada was supposed to inaugurate that. And Prabhupada just spoke Bhagavad Gita philosophy. And at the end they said, well, could you introduce this book? You're supposed to be speaking about the book. So at the end of the lecture, then again they went and said, Prabhupada said, this book is called such and such, it's by such and such, it is inaugurated. That's all. He didn't want to speak on it. But Prabhupada was extremely circumspect in these matters. So, fools rush in where angels fear to tread. Become an angel, then go in. Don't falsely stick some wax wings on your back and think you can fly back to Godhead with some materially made factory-made wings, but we have to actually develop the qualification of complete surrender, complete non-attachment to this material world, complete attachment to Krishna. And then, by the grace of the acharyas, Srila Prabhupada, and then that gift will be given to us. But we can't take a ramming rod and break down the doors of Vaikuntha and charge in. There's no way. It's by invitation only. Yeah, so any question, comment, protest, or anything else? Yeah.
Imagine this person who got very affected or by reading something and he wrote faster.
Yeah.
So I have a question which might be related. Like, I was thinking, by chanting a verse in the Bhagavad Gita, which is like, say, related to pride, or that there's a lot of, like, a lot of suffering in this material world, does the meaning of this verse act on the listener just by the chanting of the Sanskrit?
Just by the chanting of the Sanskrit, does the verse have a purifying effect?
Yeah, on that particular
On that particular anartha.
Yeah.
If we read about pride from Bhagavad Gita, just by chanting the Sanskrit verse, will it act on the anartha? Well, the Bhagavad Gita is chanted by pure devotees. That will be very purifying. Actually, even anything a pure devotee says. If a pure devotee says, we'd better go soon before the rain starts, that's also purifying. Because everything a pure devotee says is imbued with the desire to serve Krishna. It's all fully transcendental. Whereas if a non-devotee chants the Bhagavad Gita, then it's like milk touched by the lips of a serpent. You know that analogy? Yeah. So it depends a lot on who chants it. Of course, a pure devotee doesn't spend all day talking about the weather. His core discussions are about Krishna and topics of Krishna consciousness. Although actually Srila Prabhupada he spoke a lot on matters of history and what you might call worldly matters. But he shed a Krishna conscious light on it. He showed us how to see everything in this world in the light of the teachings of Bhagavad Gita. So yeah, these are our basic activities. Chanting Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and other chants given to us by the acharyas, chanting the Bhagavad Gita. If we chant a verse about pride, the bad effects of pride, we can do that, but it's better to understand the meaning of the verse and how we are to overcome the anartha. It's just Krishna spoke a specific message to Arjuna. It wasn't that Krishna just spoke something and by the sound vibration Arjuna's consciousness changed. It wasn't like that. It was a matter of Arjuna trying to understand and Krishna trying to make him understand, and Krishna eventually understood the philosophy, and then Arjuna changed his mind. So it wasn't just by the sound vibration that his consciousness changed, but by the understanding the philosophy. So that's why Prabhupada translated the Bhagavad Gita into English and commented on it so that we can understand the meaning. So it's not just by hearing this sound of the verses chanted, we're supposed to understand what they mean also. That's more important than the sound of a sound that we don't understand. Is a sound that we do understand. Yeah.
And what about Bhaktivinoda Thakur? He's describing like how different demons are related to different anarthas.
Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes their demons related to different anarthas.
So,
it's not exactly that demons are related to different anarthas, but
yeah.
He analyzes that certain anarthas are demonstrated by those demons, that they and how one can overcome them.
So by relating one of these stories, that will have an effect on...
By relating one of these stories in the manner that Bhaktivinoda Thakur does, that can help one to overcome various anarthas, yeah.
If you see like a...
Yes, yes. So what's the... Is this a comment or a question?
Something
or what?
That we can use, like, if you're teaching someone or you want to have some... If
we're trying to bring someone to Krishna consciousness, then Bhaktivinoda Thakur's descriptions of his analysis of different demons in Krishna Leela with and the concomitant anarthas which are to be overcome, that's going to be a bit over the heads of people who are coming newly to Krishna consciousness. That's more for people who are already somewhat understanding the philosophy, isn't it?
Yeah, so my question is like... If you see, like, for instance, one person, you can see he's very much contaminated by some kind of Mayavada conception.
Mm.
So if you read one of these stories about the demons...
If we read one of the stories of the demons to someone who's contaminated by the Mayavada conception, again, I think it's going to be... It's more for practicing devotees that's meant for, rather than for people...
On what level? The devotee, on what level?
Devotee means someone who's practicing Krishna consciousness, who's convinced of the basic philosophy and teachings, who's familiar with the stories in Krishna book. It's not for new people.
Unlike Bhajana Kriya?
You can try it if you like. It's not forbidden, but if you ask my advice, which you're doing, I'd say that it's better to stick to the standard analogies which are given, because people, for a start, people contaminated with Mayavada, they don't have faith in Krishna Leela anyway. Or if they do, they have it on a very superficial Mayavadi way.
So it's not like they hear one of these Leelas and they become angry and that is purifying for them.
Better you don't speak these things to them. Follow Prabhupada's example, how he preached against Mayavada. If you want to preach against Mayavada, first you should have a thorough understanding of the issues. Otherwise, you might get caught yourself.
No, but like I was reading one conversation, and
have you read all of Prabhupada's books?
No, not yet.
Read all of Prabhupada's books several times, then read the conversations better.
This is. One small book by Prabhupada.
Oh, I see. It comes in a small book, yeah. Because in the conversations there are all kinds of things which are out of context. You know, you can't see the context. And you know. Srila Prabhupada himself emphasizes his books are most important. Yeah. So this is what? It's from a small book, like Perfect Questions, Perfect Answers, something like that.
Yeah, like this specific book, Life Comes From Life.
Life Comes From Life, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, he's mentioning... Just shortly about Putana. So I was just thinking if Prabhupada does this to maybe part of the preaching, it's part of the strategy to mention.
Well, Srila Prabhupada, you have to understand the conversations in Life Comes From Life were among Srila Prabhupada and his disciples.
Yeah.
I don't find there's any instance of Srila Prabhupada speaking to completely new people in the West and referring to Putana. Now that book was printed, so, and Prabhupada wanted that printed, so maybe that reference to Putana should have a footnote. But in general, Srila Prabhupada, he didn't talk about Krishna Leela to newcomers. It's over their heads. Prabhupada spoke of how there's a supreme controller, we have to surrender to him. The supreme controller, is understood as having six opulences in full. That might be the next step. But to speak about Krishna Leela is over the heads of almost everyone in the Western world and in India also, even though they may think they know about it, but they don't. They only have a superficial understanding. Yeah.
I was just thinking of it as just a small extra thing to
small extra thing.
Yeah.
If you're going to preach to Mayavadis, you know what you're doing, don't you? It's not a flippant thing.
Yeah.
You have to read the books very carefully, understand them very deeply. It's not a game. We'll finish there. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Bhagavad Gita as it is, ki jai. Hare Krishna.